Live and local, this is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, August 2nd. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, it's all about First Friday. We'll talk with artists Wayne Owen and Vivian Faith Prescott about their show at the Jack this Friday. Photographer Toby Harbinuk will be here to highlight his selection as the featured artist for August at the Juno Artist Gallery. We'll hear about what's happening this First Friday at the Canvas, as well as updates about their fall classes, and we'll get the details about the Alaska Panhandlers Toy Run on Sunday. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, right here on a Juno afternoon. Weather for the rest of today, partly sunny, highs around 70, and tonight mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, partly sunny, highs around 70. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Calling it a way to reduce fractionalization of tribal lands, the U.S. Interior Department announced this week that it is scaling back the land buyback program. The buyback started in 2013 under then-President Barack Obama to consolidate tribal lands by allowing tribes to purchase sections from willing sellers. The program relied on nearly $2 billion set aside from the Cobell settlement. The announcement cites feedback from tribal leaders and landowners as reasons behind the change. The announcement says the department leadership will determine how best to allocate the remaining $540 million earmarked for the program. The man charged in the abduction and murder of an 11-year-old Navajo girl entered a guilty plea Tuesday in federal court in New Mexico. 28-year-old Tom Begay admits to the 6 counts stemming from the death of Ashlyn Mike in May of last year. The plea includes charges Begay abducted the girl's brother, who managed to escape unharmed. Begay initially pleaded not guilty. A release by the U.S. Department of Justice says this week's plea agreement requires a mandatory life sentence with no possibility of release. Family members and others filled the U.S. District Courtroom for the hearing. Afterwards, the girl's father, Gary Mike, told reporters that Begay finally admitted to what he and others already knew was true. In a written statement, Navajo Nation President Russell Begay said his community has suffered pain since the crime occurred and that the plea agreement is one step forward in healing. The crime prompted a review of Amber Alert systems designed to notify the public when a child is abducted. In this case, the notification went out hours after the abduction report. Last month, the Navajo Nation voted to support a congressional measure to expand the Amber Alert system to reservations. Chiefs from Canada's largest Native organization have passed a resolution calling for changes to the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the chiefs would not go so far as to support a call to replace the current commissioners.
The chiefs of the Assembly of First Nations were gathered in Regina for their annual summer meeting, and the issue of murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls was high on their agenda, specifically whether to endorse growing calls for a hard reset of the Commission of Inquiry. Some argued that to do that, there might not even be another inquiry, or it could take a couple of years to get off the ground. And there were arguments that some families have already given testimony during the inquiry's first hearing. The Assembly also heard from people who want a complete reset of the inquiry, people like Hilda Anderson Pierce, who lost family members to violence.
You failed in communications. You failed to build trust. You failed to build relationships with families. So for me, I stand here today and I ask the commissioners to respectively step down.
Debate among the chiefs continued for nearly 2 hours, some saying Canada's Indigenous people can't afford another delay, adding that although the process is flawed, they can still work together to fix it. Others said to remove the commissioners would be to kill the inquiry. But in the end, the chiefs from the country's most powerful First Nations organization rejected the call for the Prime Minister to replace the commissioners. But they did support calling for changes, including some form of reset and rethinking the commission's mandate and process. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Supreme Court could take up a water rights case involving the Agua Caliente Band of Kaweah Indians this fall. The Wall Street Journal reports the years-long case involving the small California tribe could affect water rights throughout the western United States. The tribe won a federal appeals court ruling in March in their argument to gain more control over management of the aquifer below tribal land. They say the public water agencies in charge of the water have mismanaged it. The aquifer helped drive development in California's Coachella Valley, including the city of Palm Springs. The paper notes tribes have won legal water rights challenges in the past, but the issue is less settled when it comes to groundwater. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me are my first guest, Wayne Owen and Vivian Faith Prescott. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're both artists, and you're here to talk about your show at the Jack. That's the Juno Arts and Culture Center, opening this Friday. Tell us a bit about what we can see.
Well, you're going to see an amazing group of paintings that are based on natural history subjects and stuff from the wild here in Alaska. I think everybody that's a real Alaskan is going to have a great time in this show.
Wow. I'm intrigued.
And mine is called Unearth, and I sculpt with garbage from Wrangell's Garbage Dump Beach, mainly. Vintage and antique garbage, I call it. And so the sculptures will be there. There's a steampunk raven is one of them that you'll get to see. And I sculpt them from people's profiles, so I have their heads on old fishing boat boards, and I have an owl woman and a porcupine woman too.
Wow, that all sounds great. So this is a sort of a collaborative exhibit, but you're each exhibiting your own individual work.
Certainly.
And the theme that connects them. Let's say a little bit more about that.
Well, I think, you know, in looking at the pieces all together, you know, there are many of the pieces have collected objects, you know, attached. Both of us have objects with porcupine quills in them, you know, and, cool. And that's great. I use a lot of stone that I cut, local stone that I capture and cut and, you know, build into the paintings. And so it's sort of a natural history subject, I think, is.
I think flight. I've got some fairies and birds, and you've got lots of birds.
Lots and lots of birds.
It's all a celebration of the natural world.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Inspired by the beauty of Alaska, how does your environment play, like, come out in your work?
For all of my pieces, they're all familiar Alaska birds, life size or larger. You know, so there's an eagle, there's several ravens, and there's lots of shorebirds and magpies and things like that. Stuff that everybody sees, hoping that everybody sees them a little bit different after they look at these paintings.
And you, Vivian?
And I take the unnatural and make it natural looking.
I love that.
And I take the natural and make it unnatural looking.
Well, you guys are a good pair. Did you know each other before this show was put together?
On social media.
On social media.
Instagram, Twitter, things like that.
You follow each other's stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. That's supportive. Now, Vivian, you're primarily known as a poet. Is this your first foray into sculpture?
I had a show at Rain Dance Gallery a couple years ago. Tommy Joseph and Christina Cranston are some of my big supporters, so they gave me a little mini show on a first Friday in Sitka, Alaska. And Eugene Solovyov at Sitka Rose Gallery has my art there, too. So they've been kind of my big supporters, but I moved from Sitka to Wrangell, and I've been starting to get my sculptures there. So I've been able to – I applied for this opportunity, and I thought it was very interesting that you could share space with another artist. So it's been nice to get to know the other artist.
And you're primarily a photographer. Is that correct, Wayne?
Yeah, artist.
Artist.
Artistically,
okay.
Yeah.
So
artistically.
This is not your first foray into painting?
No, I've been painting for about 20 years, but only really confident for the last 5 or 6, self-assured.
So is this your first public exhibit?
Of the paintings.
Of the paintings?
I've been doing photography. You know, I show regularly with Alaska Photographic Arts. Art Matters out in the Valley is a great advocate for my work, and I've been featured artist at that place. You know, so
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, this is a big deal for both of you then.
Yes,
it is.
Branching out and putting it out there for everyone to see.
Yeah.
How exciting. So let's say a little bit about your own personal history or culture. How does that come out in your work?
I'm kind of focusing this show on Earth on my Sami heritage. I'm part Sami, so I guess you'd call me Sami American. And one of our storytelling traditions is to have stories that are layered and many meanings. So I kind of focused on Earth on that. So each piece is actually more of a story. And I think me being a short story writer, I can't get away from that anyway. So even though I'm sculpting, there's always a story behind the Porcupine Woman, for example, is my great niece who overcame a lot of odds and went to Dartmouth this year to college. And so there's a story behind the pieces.
And will you be there to tell us the stories?
I will.
And how about you, Wayne? How's your history?
I'm a biologist who grew up outdoors and have had a long, a nice career with, let's say, an unnamed federal land management agency locally.
I wonder what that could be.
one of, however many. And so I've been attuned to the natural world for my whole life and spent as much time out there as possible. And just looking at things closely and far and seeing things differently. And that and twitchy fingers, so I'm always doodling and getting ideas. So, yeah, it's fun.
So you guys both just came over from the Jack where you're getting the exhibit ready.
That's right.
How is it looking?
So it's great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah. It's going to be packed full of stuff.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Packed full of stuff.
Oh, I even have an interactive art where my father built a beachcombing table. So it's about 2 foot by 2 foot, and it's going to be filled with Wrangell sand. And you can actually go and beachcomb in it for the glass or the sea pottery or sea metal. And you arrange your art, take an instant photograph, like a little mini Polaroid, and then you put it on a bulletin board. So you, as a participant gallery, can be part of the show.
I love the sound of that.
You can go beachcombing.
How creative. I think that's going to be a big hit. So let's talk about the details of the show. It's First Friday. It's at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
Yes.
When should people start showing up?
I think the Jack scheduled us for the reception, artist reception, 4:30 till 6:30 on Friday.
Fantastic.
So we'll be there. We'll probably be there early.
I'm sure there will be lots of lots of people there. I'm sure you'll get an excellent turnout.
I hope it rains so people think it's the best thing to do.
I'm going to pretend like you didn't say that, sir. And how about, where can we find out more? Everybody knows the Jack has a website, but either of you have your own personal websites where we could find out more about your work or get a little preview? Wayne's shaking his head no.
I call my studio, which is a physical studio, I suppose, in the cabin I live in, but it's called Raven's Beach because the beach that I beach come on is a garbage dump beach and it's full of trickster-like things. So Raven's Beach is on Facebook, so you can find my Facebook page there.
And you can actually always stop by Art Matters, and there's always several pieces, one to several pieces of mine hanging there.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
good.
Just year-round.
Just come and visit in person then.
Come visit
in person.
Forget
about the internet.
See it.
All right, great. Well, do either of you have anything else you'd like to share today about the exhibit or your art or anything?
It's amazing the diversity and the complexity of all the pieces. They're very detailed, all of them. There's lots of stuff there to look at. I think if you're a visual person at all, you would be going to the Jack and you would be having fun with this.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I'm already looking forward to Friday. And thank you both for being here today.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been my honor.
Thank you.
All right. See you Friday.
Tuesday's gray and Wednesday too. Thursday, I don't care about you. It's Friday, I'm in love. My Monday you can fall apart. Tuesday, Wednesday break my heart. Thursday doesn't even start. It's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, wait. Sunday always comes too late. Friday, never hesitate. I don't care if Monday's black. Tuesday, Wednesday, heart attack. Thursday, never looking back. It's Friday, I'm in love.
It is about 17 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and my next guest is Toby Harbinick, photographer and featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery this first Friday. Welcome, Toby.
Thank you.
Oh, goodness. I was still playing some music. Maybe we should do that again.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I couldn't hear it. I didn't have my headphones on. So, you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and I'm with Toby Harbinick. Did I say your name right, Toby?
Yeah.
Okay, photographer, featured artist at Juno Artist Gallery this first Friday. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So for those who don't know, please tell the good people what kind of photography you do, or how would you describe your style?
I would say that my style is contrasty. I like really bright colors and vivid contrast. I print my photos on primarily right now on aluminum panels, and also I figure there's one or two people out there who have my cutting boards. What I'm doing this week at the actually this whole month at the Artist Gallery is some new aerial photos, including some aerial Northern Lights photos.
Wow. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So last August, mid-August, I myself and some friends camped out on Thunder Mountain and spent the night up there during a big aurora show. I've got some auroras above the glacier and some really killer city lights of the Mendenhall Valley with some fog over them. And it was a really spectacular night. And we got the best of both worlds. We got some winter-type aurora scenery, but without the winter temperatures and wind that comes with it. And yeah, I figure I'll be showing that off, and the theme of my month there is aerial photography. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get new aerial photos of Juno yet this summer. There's been some changes in Juno, namely the glacier and the new docks downtown that I've been wanting to capture and update my my portfolio with. But I do have a couple of really neat aerials from the Ketchikan area, and I'll probably have some stuff from Sitka put up, and then the new auroras. So come down anytime this month. I really appreciate this. The city and borough of Juneau has made parking free in the garages downtown after 4 p.m. Also, Friday is a relatively slow ship day. I think it's 2 or 3 ships. So it's probably going to be a really good night to come be out and about. And the artist gallery has 23 local Juneau artists. There's a lot of cool stuff there. Come say hi to me. And we consistently have really high quality snacks, and I'm going to go out of my way to even further raise the bar this Friday. So I'd recommend showing up early if you're in the grazing mood.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. I feel like every time I have the Juneau, the featured artist for the Juneau Artist Gallery, I inevitably get distracted by mentioning the snacks. And I wasn't going to do it this time, but then you said you had some special snacks planned, so we had to. I'm glad because, I mean, it really is the best spread. But enough about the food. Your work is pretty well known around town. I had a couple questions that came up as you were talking. First of all, how do you capture your aerial photographs?
My favorite is a helicopter, but if it's going to be cost effective, but I've also worked a lot with fixed wing. The main thing is you want to take a door or a window off because the plexiglass in the aircraft windows is significantly lower quality than your camera lens, and you don't want that taking away sharpness and creating light artifacts and stuff like that. You typically want to tape your seatbelt shut because if that gets bumped open, it can be a nasty little surprise to look down and find out that you're untethered in an open aircraft side. And you don't want to stick your, contrary to what you see in movies, you don't want to stick your lens outside the window because it'll get bounced around by the wind to either type of machine, fixed wing or rotor wing. You're typically moving 100 plus miles an hour.
Oh my goodness. That's all terrifying.
So
you really risk life and limb for the perfect shot.
Maybe a little.
So you talked a little bit about how you capture the aerial shots, but I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit more about your process from snapping the shot to the final product. What's all involved in that?
I'm trigger happy. I take a lot of shots, and then a little bit of post processing, contrast adjustments, things like that, cropping, especially for panoramas. Sometimes the panoramas can be cropped, but typically, you know, because the camera, your common cameras are relatively squarish rectangles. You want to overlap your shots so that you can, when you make a big print, it's you still have a lot of detail in there. Mm-hmm. And so my shots are especially my panoramas are anywhere from like 8 or 10 shots, and I've got some pretty extreme ones where I've done upwards of 100 shots overlapping and stitched together with Photoshop or another tool.
Excellent. So your work is pretty well known. Do you have any particular pieces that are more popular than others?
Northern Lights have been above the Juneau City Lights have been pretty popular with both tourists and locals. But the Mendenhall Glacier is a really popular theme as well.
Cool.
And wolf pictures. Dog lovers love wolf pictures.
Really? So where would some of our listeners see your work around town?
Let's see. Prospector, Nysac Dental, Mindy Shaw Dental, the Juneau Artist Co-op, and there's probably a few other places. I mean, I have a lot of customers, but those are the main business venues that come to mind.
Excellent. So at the show on Friday, you said we'll see some of those new shots from your night out on Thunder Mountain.
Correct.
That sounds pretty magical. Anything else you'd like to highlight that will be at the exhibit?
That's I think those are the main shots of interest. I'm putting some other stuff out that will probably be a little bit more of a niche interest to aviation enthusiasts. If you're out and about, swing by. We'll have some great food. I'll be there, happy to answer questions. And you know, it's never too late to start, too early to start Christmas shopping.
That is so true. I actually bought a Christmas gift last First Friday, so you're absolutely right about that.
Excellent work.
Thanks. Yeah, can some of it done early. All right. So that's Juno Artist Gallery. Are they opening up the exhibit about 4:30?
I'll have the stuff up quite a bit earlier than the opening, but we'll be putting snacks out probably about 4:30.
Okay, good to know.
And the parking, you could probably sneak in there a little before 4, but you know, if I'd say yeah, come out. Come on downtown about 4 or 5 somewhere after work. Browse around, hit the restaurants. Go up the tram or whatever. It's weather forecast looking pretty nice.
Yeah, that's great. And then do you have a website where people can check out your work?
AlaskaImagery.com. And I'm also on Facebook. You can search Alaska Imagery or you can search for Harbanuk, HARBANUK.
Excellent. All right. Anything else you'd like to add?
That's it. I hope to see a lot of folks in a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have an excellent turnout. Well, thanks so much for being here, Toby.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 2nd of August, 2017. It was on this day in 1932, the American physicist Carl Anderson discovered the first physical evidence that antimatter was more than just an idea. Physicists had been speculating as long ago as the late 19th century that there may exist particles in matter that are exact opposites of the matter that surrounds us, mirror image anti-atoms, and perhaps even whole anti-solar systems, where matter and antimatter might meet and annihilate one another. Carl Anderson, on this day, 1932, was photographing and tracking the passage of cosmic rays through a cloud chamber, a cylindrical container filled with dense water vapor lit from the outside with a viewing window. When individual particles passed through the sides of the container into the saturated air, they would leave spider web tracks of condensation, each type of particle forming a uniquely shaped trail. Anderson noticed a curious pattern, a trail like that of an electron with an exactly identical but opposite curve, an electron's mirror image, evidence of an anti-electron. He named the particle the positron, and he won a Nobel Prize for the discovery 4 years later. It was in 1940 that the science fiction writer Isaac Asimov took up this idea of the particle, using it as the basis for his fictional positronic brain, a structure made of platinum and iridium, and his means for imparting human-like consciousness to the robots in his story. And the fictional uses of antimatter have since spread throughout literature and popular entertainment, from the writing of Robert Heinlein to the classic British TV series Doctor Who, to Star Trek, and to Dan Brown's Angels and Demons. It's the birthday of the novelist and essayist James Baldwin, born Harlem, 1924, oldest of 9 children, family dominated by his stepfather, a Pentecostal minister. James left home in 1943, moved to Greenwich Village, wrote about it in Notes of a Native Son, and then when he was 24, expatriated himself to France, where he hoped he could escape the label of Black writer. Here's a poem for today by Wallace Stevens. The house was quiet and the world was calm. The house was quiet and the world was calm. The reader became the book and summer night was like the conscious being of the book. The house was quiet, and the world was calm. The words were spoken as if there was no book, except that the reader leaned above the page, wanted to lean, wanted much to be the scholar to whom his book is true, to whom the summer night is like a perfection of thought. The house was quiet because it had to be. The quiet was part of the meaning, part of the mind, the access of perfection to the page. And the world was calm, the truth in a calm world in which there is no other meaning. Itself is calm, itself is summer and night, itself is the reader leaning late and reading there. A poem by Wallace Stevens, The House Was Quiet and the World Was Calm, from the collected poems of Wallace Stevens, published by Vintage and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement. Available at locations throughout Southeast. More at seakliving.com.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is Mercedes Munoz, coming to us from The Canvas. Welcome.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Are you all ready for First Friday?
We are ready. We have a great show coming up. The title is Immediate Energy, and this is going to be a group show with three of our artists that work at the Canvas who experience developmental disabilities. And those artists are Mirav Manefi, Luis Hernandez, and Todd Wright. So we're really looking forward to that show coming up.
Excellent. That sounds great. What's their work like? Can you give us a little teaser?
Yeah. So these three artists, they're, you know, very similar in their process and style, but their final outcomes are uniquely their own. Mirav really works with a mixture of mediums and references his friends and his classmates in his work. And you'll see a lot with letters and different words that he's writing in his piece. And he does a mixture of watercolors, inks, and markers when he creates that. Luis works primarily with acrylic inks, and he has this like natural speed and confidence when he's applying mark making that's really striking and fun to watch. And then Todd is like, he has so much energy when he's working, and he is working at such a great speed, and then will, you know, just as quickly stop and observe and then start again. And so, you know, they all have a really different style, but their approach is similar in many ways too. And Todd works with watercolor and oil pastels, and he also references nature a lot in his work, primarily animals of Southeast Alaska that are important to his Tlingit heritage.
Wow, that all sounds great.
Yeah, so definitely have to come by and see it because it's, you know, I always usually better in person.
Yeah, I hate to miss it. So yeah. I'll definitely be stopping by. I love last month's too. You guys had a great turnout, and the artist had really interesting work.
Thank you. What
else is happening for this month?
Well, we are just finalizing our fall schedule. We have been working really hard on it, trying to get a variety of teachers to teach different mediums this fall. And we finally have that done, and we are ready to post it. If you are on our email list, we sent out an e-blast today with a 5% promotional discount on all fall classes now through Friday. So our classes aren't up on our website yet, but if you receive our emails, you should definitely check that out, because If you get those emails, you get a discount for the next couple days. And if you're not on our list yet, you should definitely sign up because we'll look at maybe doing something like that in the future. We just want to do thank all our customers for their ongoing support of the Canvas and, you know, always taking our classes. And so we wanted to show that appreciation by a little discount and a sneak peek preview to our fall classes.
That's really exciting. I'm already like thinking about that. I've taken some classes at Canvas before, and discounts are always good.
Oh yeah, well, definitely want to appreciate, you know, the community and how much they do for our program. And but we have so many fun classes happening this fall. We have kids classes, family classes, short workshops, and month long classes. We did a survey a few months back, or I guess 6 months back now, asking people, you know, kind of trying to figure out what it was that they wanted in classes. And one of the biggest pieces of feedback we got was that people wanted more short workshops. And so we're really trying to meet that need and balance that, knowing that some people still want those longer classes, but we're really trying to have something for everyone. So we have printmaking, we have jewelry, we always have wheel throwing and different ceramics classes for hand building and throwing. We have oil painting, we'll have watercolor, acrylics, drawing, portrait drawing, all kinds of fun stuff. So definitely, if you get our emails, you can check that now and you should be able to see all our classes. If not, keep an eye out, and Friday morning it will be posted on our website, the full fall schedule.
I was just about to ask, yeah. So thank you.
And you can sign up in person or online. Excuse me.
And you have a nice little catalog there in
we
front
do.
Of you.
We do, yeah.
Will that be available on Friday?
Mm-hmm. On Friday you can get the printed out class schedules. And the printed out schedule we have just August through September. It would be a lot to fit into one one schedule, but you can check out what's happening in the schedule for the upcoming month, and then you can see the full fall schedule on our website, which is just canvasarts.org.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what else would you like to talk about?
Let's see. Well, the one other big thing that we have coming up, this isn't, you know, specific to the Canvas, but Reach does have a dance fundraiser coming up. Let's Dance this Saturday. And that'll be featuring Colette Costa and the High Costa Living. There's going to be an Alaska Brewing Company beer garden, light hors d'oeuvres, live auction. It's going to be a really fun time, and all the proceeds will go to Reach, which is a fantastic organization.
Yeah, it really is. Can you say a little bit more about Reach and what they do, and how do the proceeds benefit Reach?
Sure. So for Reach, they are helping all ages of individuals who experience developmental disabilities throughout their life. So from birth to senior living, they're assisting in all ways of employment and housing and all of that. And so just facilitating their needs. And the Canvas is a branch of Reach. And so, you know, we have that same mission, but focused towards the arts.
Great. Thank you for mentioning that connection between the Canvas and Reach. Sure. I'm not sure everybody's clear on that.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, I think that's the most of what we got going on right now. Lots of classes, First Friday, the dance, so all kinds of fun things coming up.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming in and telling us all about it. Would you say the website is the best place to find out more information?
Yeah, definitely. We're also always posting things on Facebook, so if you don't follow us already, definitely follow us on Facebook,
too. I don't think I do.
Yeah, you should. We post everything from our, you know, classes that are coming up to events we have going on that day. So it's a fun spot to check us out.
Okay, great. Thanks. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add today?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for having me, though.
Oh, well, thank you very much for coming. It's always great to hear from you guys. I love getting the First Friday preview from the Canvas.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I will see you Friday. Coming up next, Bird Note.
Reach is proud to present Let's Dance, a fun fundraiser benefiting Reach and featuring live music from Gamble and the High Costa Living, a beer garden with Alaskan Brewing Company, hors d'oeuvres, and a live auction. Get your dance moves on and enjoy a fun night for a good cause on Saturday, August 5th at 7 p.m. at the Jack. Tickets at the Canvas, Hearthside Books, or at the Jack.
This is Bird Note. At the close of a summer day, the songbirds go silent. Aviri's final notes reverberate in near darkness. And, as if on cue, the true birds of the night now make their voices known. In an eastern woodland, the eerie trills and whinnies of an eastern screech owl are among the first sounds of the night. An eastern screech owl is petite, standing just under 9 inches tall. Mates trill to one another during courtship and whinny to defend territory. When night falls west of the Rockies, a different pair of small owls combine voices, hooting a rhythmic duet. These night singers, western screech owls, are found in low-elevation woodlands and deserts. But there's another bird whose voice will drown out the loudest of screech owls. These are the rhythmic hoots of a barred owl, a large, stocky bird of forests, swamps, and suburban parks. Pairs may break into a rollicking duet, sometimes called their monkey call. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It is about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is Craig Fowler from the Panhandles Motorcycle Club and Katie Bosler representing Bartlett. Welcome to the show.
Good to see you, Shelley, on this balmy day.
Yes, it's quite balmy. So what did you ride in on today?
I came in on a 2006 Street Bob, a nice little Harley-Davidson that I own.
Excellent.
Nice runner, good gas mileage. one of the fun bikes. It'll be in the rodeo this Saturday.
Cool. And Katie, what did you ride in on?
I rode in my boring Toyota Yaris. But then I pull up and I'm like, wow, there's this red bike like right in front of the door. Who could be here? there's actually three bikes here. He's got a support team, but they're just kind of in the wings. So
yeah, I was hoping they'd all be in the studio. At times like these, I kind of wish a Juno Afternoon was televised because I could just picture myself seated in front of three burly bikers and picturing you all holding stuffed animals.
This is the 23rd year that we've been doing this. So
you guys are here to talk about the Toy Run. Let's back up a little bit. I don't know much about the Panhandlers. Could you tell us about the Alaska Panhandlers Motorcycle Club, please?
We've been around 39 years now here in Juneau, and we all have gone through the – we have a lot of older members now that when we started this kind of the Toy Run thing, it was for the members' children that have had experience. That was kind of what it was about. Well, now they're all grandparents and some are even, great-grandparents. So it's the Panhandlers in the beginning had kids in mind. And right after the Panhandlers Motorcycle Club became in existence, we were having Easter egg hunts and everything else, But now that the members are older, our kids don't really hunt the Easter eggs. It's more of the grandkids that do it.
Right.
But we've always been a community of men that we enjoy helping kids because, they're the ones who can't really help themselves. So we had the diabetes raffles for the motorcycles where we've helped kids with diabetes over the years. And the Toy Run is just something else that brings us enjoyment. I mean, we really enjoy doing it.
That's so interesting. So you're a motorcycle club who just does good deeds for the community.
Actually, we like to ride motorcycles. And if you actually ride one for more than like a day or two a year, you have to work on them. So having all the guys together with broken down motorcycles, it gives us lots to do in the winter. And then we go out and this year we went on a beautiful ride across the Pony Express Trail, the Badlands of Nevada. We went and saw the ichthyosaur fossil in Berlin, Nevada, which most people don't know. An ichthyosaur is a dolphin type dinosaur, but in Nevada it's the biggest. It's I think the one is 90 feet long. And most of them in the rest of the world are no bigger than 6 feet long. So it was a destination that we got to go see, and that was 3,200 miles in 12 days. So it wasn't riding hard. It was a lot of fun. We got one drop of rain on us. So
we do ride
a lot, but we do have to ship our bikes out of here, and some of us have bikes down south already.
Yeah.
That we're more about the riding than anything, I think. And the rodeo will prove it this Saturday. The rodeo is one of our favorite things to do also.
It sounds like a lot of fun. So we'll talk about both of those things. We're going to tell me about the 23rd annual Toy Run. Tell us how that all got started, or just tell us a little bit about what's happening with that.
Well, Katie, you can tell them what you were telling me earlier about the...
We have a big bin of stuffed toys down in what we call the basement of the administration building at Bartlett Hospital. And that is on account of this annual event that the panhandlers put on, where they collect stuffed toys that providers, healthcare providers, can hand out to children who might, you know, need a little comfort. And I just was talking to people in the diagnostic imaging and in the emergency department today, as a matter of fact, who said that they use these toys quite consistently, that especially if a kid's getting an x-ray, right, it's scary, it's dark, they have to be still, their arm might be broken. So, you know, getting a little stuffed toy from the shelf and be able to give it to the child as an incentive or to have them, you know, keep that with them is really very helpful. And they had in radiology, they have the stuffed toys. They have a little, their own collection from this collection, the larger collection, on a shelf. And they said, it's getting low. So they're really glad the toy run is happening again on Sunday, this Sunday.
That's fantastic. So how does the toy run fit in with the stuffed animals?
Well, what we do is we set up donation bins around a few places here in town. Louise in Douglas, the Triangle has a you can donate a stuffed animal there, and you don't have to come and be part of the toy run, or you can actually come to the Douglas Fire Hall on Sunday and donate $10 and get a meal there. We're going to be doing we've got a few ribs we're doing, but mostly hamburgers and hot dogs and chili dogs and things like that is what we'll be serving this time. But
good.
You come and you donate. If you don't have time to go get a stuffed animal, you can still come donate $10 and we feed you. And then we take the money that's left over afterwards. And like last year, we had the total donations was $1,002. And we went downtown and bought 1,000 something worth of stuffed animals. And we got actually a really good deal. In some places we bought, they were 2 for 1. So we were able to make 12 big lawn and leaf bags full of toys last year for the hospital. So that, yes. You know, and Louis is a great place to go and drop them off. And the Triangle, of course, you know, you can go to the Triangle and drop toys off there, or you can just bring them to the fire hall on Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a haul. It's pretty impressive what is collected. The other thing that's really impressive, if you get a chance, and it looks like we're going to have good weather this weekend, is if you go stand in the middle of the roundabout at the end of the Douglas Bridge and watch this stream of bikes come across all at once on their way to the fire hall. It's a once a year thing.
That's
right?
Absolutely right.
And I mean, how many did you have last year? It seemed like a lot.
I didn't get the exact count on it. But it was a nice day. So we always say, it's not just Harley Davidson. Any motorcycle you want to ride, you can even follow us and support cars behind the run. It's really something to brag about being part of once you see what the end result actually is, like Katie was saying, right, with the children and the smiles. And I mean, when you see someone in the mall and the kid comes up and says, "I got one of your toys," you know, I mean, right then it makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, that's so sweet. So the toy drive is part of it, and then also the bike ride, the ride that starts. Where does it start and where does
we're
it
starting
end?
At Donna's in the parking lot of Donna's, where the Marmontini's.
So that's where everybody should gather.
Mm-hmm, we're gonna meet there around noon, and then we'll get behind the fire truck, and at 1 o'clock we'll have a departure. We'll
come down. It's like by a fire truck.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'll pick up we'll come downtown, do the run through downtown with the fire truck, pick the toys up from the Triangle, and go to the Douglas Fire Hall for the food.
Are you going to be holding the stuffed animals while you're on the motorcycle?
We have them bungee corded on the headlights or on the back of the bike.
Yes, that's awesome.
Absolutely, yeah.
I can't wait to see that. That sounds adorable.
We've had people come out and run the toy run on dirt bikes with, you know, that are legal, street legal, and you know, and everything else. So it's whatever. If you want to ride, come on out. You know.
Scooters, Vespas.
It's hard to keep up, you know, with a Vespa, I would think. I'm not sure. I've never been on one, but... I'm a little larger, so it probably would struggle pulling me down the road at 30.
Craig, did you have a favorite stuffed toy as a kid?
It was one of the Kukla, Fran and Ollie. The snake thing, I think, was the one that I liked when I was young, but I wasn't young for very long. So.
How about you, Katie? Do you have a teddy bear or something?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think so.
No?
But I am the oldest of six close in age siblings. So I think pretty soon I was just like, you know, kind of the mini mom, and I guess wasn't holding on to anything except for a sibling.
Well, that's kind of cute. I myself had a huge collection.
They're the toy of choice because they can go in the X-ray room, or they're just easy to collect, or is there any particular reason why stuffed animals?
It seems like that is what brings kids comfort rather than having a Nerf gun that they can shoot the radiologist or whatever.
Yeah, it's something to calm them down. I think that's the idea. Calm.
A Red Rider BB gun would be cool, but you know what they do with that. So.
Oh my goodness. No, that makes sense. That makes much more sense to have stuffed animals. Well, that's okay. So that's the one thing. And now tell us about the rodeo.
The rodeo is another yearly event. We've combined it this year so it brings more people out for the rodeo, and they are aware of the toy run the next day. So everybody gets together, and it actually is made it where we have a lot more people who show up and help with the toy run.
Really?
Because of the rodeo.
So you have them back-to-back on purpose?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday. Yep. And Saturday is the rodeo and then Sunday the toy run. But the rodeo is one of those things that I was explaining to someone here recently. It's we have an event that you go down this grassy hill, and then you make a turn around and you come up another part of a grassy hill during one of the events. And someone asked me, why do you do that? And I said, because if you can do that here with all the support team, with everybody here who can help you if you have any trouble, if you wreck, we can help you fix your bike. If you can do that here, then if you're riding down Egan and someone is on their phone, like a lady ran into me here recently. She was on her phone and changed lanes and ran right into me.
Oh, my goodness.
And luckily, I've been riding since I was 8 years old, so, she was, oh, sorry, but she was on her phone. I looked over as she was running into me. And if someone does that to you on Egan, if you can make it down into the center median and back out the other side safely, you know, you've practiced that. You've had that experience. It's not something that you're just going to freak out and just let go of the handlebars.
You know? And that's what you had to do? Did you have to go into the median?
No, she hit me out by Don Abel's.
Oh,
I see. The road, where the arrows, you can only turn right into the viewing area. Well, she was on her phone and looked up, and it was time for her to merge, and she just pulled right into me.
I see.
And
but the rodeo helps riders practice those skills.
That is one thing. Just the center median thing is there. I mean, we practice driving with our left hands in Lancelot and holding a 20-foot lance with our right hand. Now, if you've ever been on a motorcycle, you know that's kind of hard. So you have to lock your throttle open and then ride with your clutch and your brake and steer with your left hand. People don't do that on a motorcycle. Once you master that, and you got both hands on it. I mean, of course, you're a better rider after that. Everything we do, the barrel race, is you can get out of the way. It teaches you to turn. It gives you the limits of your motorcycle, where the pipes hit or where the case hits on this side. It shows you back and forth how far you can turn. Everything we do in the rodeo helps you hone your skills. You don't have to be number one in all the events. I mean, of course, we all try our best, even if you just finish the events, I mean, you're a better rider for it. And that is what the rodeo is about, is it helps people figure out, you know, my pipes hit when I lean it this far. Mm-hmm. I know the limits of my motorcycle right here where there's people around and we're not going 80 miles an hour or anything like that. So it's
Do you guys really joust with lances?
We actually have a rope. We have road cones set up.
I'm stuck on that.
It's quite medieval.
Yeah, we have road cones set up that have notches, and we've taken a garden hose and turned it into a circle and gray taped it into a circle. And we set those up around a course, and then you grab the lance, and you have to ride around the course and put that 20-foot lance through the garden hose while you're riding. You can't put your feet down. You can't stop. You have to be riding while you do this. And once you do that and you drive back out on Egan, you're like, oh, my gosh, this is simple. There's nothing that can challenge me now that I've done these things. And every time we have the rodeo, people say, man, that was so much fun. I can't believe I finished some of those. I can't believe I did that. And then when they get back out on the road, their skills are, you know, massively improved, more than just turning circles in Walmart parking lot.
Wow. I had no idea that that was an event every year. That sounds
every
like
year.
A lot of fun to watch. So people can come and watch, right? You can be a spectator.
Absolutely. It's a spectator sport for sure. It's one of the funnest things. I never really win a lot, but I'm voted always the most fun to watch.
Always most fun to watch. Well, it certainly sounds like it. So what time is that on Saturday? You might have said already.
This year we're going to do photos at noon, so sign-ups are at noon. You come out at noon, and if you're signing up, we're going to take pictures of you with your bike for the rodeo. And then when everybody's signed up, we'll take a picture of everybody who's in the rodeo, and then a picture of everybody who shows up.
Okay.
So, and the rodeo actually starts at 1 o'clock, and then I think we'll be done by 5.
Okay. And tell me where that is again.
That's on Engineer's Cutoff at the clubhouse. If you turn on Engineer's Cutoff and
at the clubhouse,
you can't miss it.
Can't miss it, yeah.
if you're driving through there, you're like, well, I wonder where the clubhouse is. You think that's it with all the motorcycles and all the people?
You'd be right.
Yeah, that'd be the place.
All right. So we got the rodeo starting at noon on Saturday at the clubhouse on Engineers Cutoff, and the toy run starts at what time on Sunday?
We're meeting at Donna's at noon and the meeting departure at 1 o'clock.
And you're ending up on Douglas.
Yeah,
at the
we'll
firehouse.
Do the loop down to the triangle and then over to the fire hall.
And you can bring your stuff down.
And the barbecue is around 1:32 to 3:34, right?
Well, yeah. It usually takes, by the time we get downtown and get the toys and get over there, it's right around 2 o'clock when we start serving food. So it's the food's 2 to 4. So.
Okay, cool.
Right. And this is along with Capital City Fire and Rescue, that part.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to them for helping support this event, and and all the proceeds and the stuffed animals go to Bartlett for the kiddos that might need it at the hospital.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to publicly thank the panhandlers for doing this every year. I can't believe it's already happening again. It's one of those things. It's like Christmas. Like, oh, it's a toy run again. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys seem like a cool bunch of dudes.
Yeah, you know, sometimes people watch The Sons of Anarchy or something like that, and they try and compare us to that. And it's like, man, you watch too much TV. There's not really a Starship Enterprise either, you know.
Well, thanks for coming in and dispelling those preconceived notions.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's great talking to you both. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
Just remember that you can drop toys off at the Triangle or Douglas over in Douglas at Louie's.
Okay.
Or meet us there at the fire hall
Kick
at 2 o'clock.
$10. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, you know, and have a club soda or a beer while you're at it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It sounds like a blast. And the weather's going to shape up to be really nice for this event, so it's going to be so much fun. Well, thanks for coming and talking to us about it today.
Thank you,
Shelley.
See you this weekend.
Okay.
Thanks so much for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Today's guests were Wayne Owen and Vivian Faith Prescott talking about their show at the Jack this first Friday. Toby Harbinick was here too, talking about his show at the Juno Artist Gallery this first Friday. Mercedes Munoz was here speaking about the first Friday events and fall classes at the Canvas. And we just heard from Craig Fowler and Katie Bosler about the toy run this Sunday with the Alaska Panhandlers Motorcycle Club. On today's show, we feature music by Yo La Tengo. They had a nice mellow cover of Friday I'm in Love for all the first Friday events. And then we played some Rancid Motorcycle Ride and Black Rebel Motorcycle Club in honor of our biker guests today. Juno Afternoon is produced by Jeff Brown, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.